Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. And today, special guest, the person mowing the lawn right outside of my house. Isn't that fun? You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Don't know what this guy's Twitter handle is, but I'll try to find out. Today is Tuesday, January 11th, and congratulations to the Alabama Crimson Tide on yet another national championship. John, I've shot my shot. We're recording this in full transparency well before the game being played, but I am accepting the inevitable Thanos-style result that is about to happen in a handful of hours here. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the only thing I can counter with is I'm still going to watch because I want to see Mel Tucker's recruits play against Alabama, and specifically on defense, and, you know, see what a Michigan State defense could become. That's where my head's at. Is that fair?
I think that's extremely fair. And I would also like to just make it known that I am not rooting for Alabama to win, not rooting for the Death Star. I very much would love to see Georgia come back and win this game. They're such a fun team. The Stetson Bennett story is fun, but you just, I'd be crazy to expect anything but Alabama winning. I want them to lose so badly, but I'm just, you know, kind of bracing for it.
Watch the sky cam. I'm going to say it a million times.
Okay. We're watching the sky. We're a sky cam podcast. Okay. Well, now that we've gotten our national championship talk out of the way, let's go back to our favorite son, John. College basketball. Michigan State remains at number 10 this week. After a one-game week, which was supposed to be a two-game week, but a one-game week. But before we get into the results, we'd like to welcome aboard Michigan State's newest future point guard, Jeremy Tears for Fears Jr., if you're old enough to get that joke. That's nice for us on this podcast. But, John, you want to talk a little bit about Jeremy and what we can expect from our newest point guard?
Absolute stud, bucket, a guy that a lot of big programs wanted. I think his final three were Michigan, Michigan State, and Illinois, but his list was everyone who matters. He plays for the Lalu connection, continues through East Lansing, which we love to see. You may remember Jaren Jackson's came from there, and that worked out pretty well, if I remember correctly. This kid is looks like, you know, you look down the line and there's a little bit of a logjam at the point guard position. I think Austin, you and I talked about this. Remember when, gosh, I can't remember what year it was, but MSU like ran out of, when Kenny Goins had to play center a few times.
Yes.
And Tom was like, never again will I be without bigs. And after last year, Tom said, never again will I be without point guards. So there potentially could be a three, you know, Big Ten caliber point guards on the same team with A.J. Hogard, Trey Holloman, and now Jeremy Fears. So exciting to see, you know, the pipeline of good point guards coming through East Lansing, not coming to a shortage anytime soon. Really big pickup. And I think the biggest piece is, can this type of pickup lead to even more momentum for that recruiting class who's now in desperate need of a wing? And with that, you can start to feel really good about that team.
Yeah, and this, I think, just to talk about Fears, well, first of all, he's a top 30 to 35 recruit. Anytime you get that high four-star guy, it's a perfect thing to get to start off any type of recruiting class. I think your point about the point guards is really good, and I prefer that overcorrection as opposed to the overcorrection in the other direction of the bigs. I mean, I think we see it every single year. Great point guards win championships. And stables of them, there's the adage of there's no such thing as too many gets overused a lot, but truly there's no such thing as too many good point guards. And Fears will add to a really solid stable. I think when you talk about him as a player, he's got a little bit of Kalen Lucas in his game. He's got a little bit of Cassius Winston, just to keep it among the Michigan State references. Not a super athlete. I mean, I don't know how many times you'll see him dunk in his time at Michigan State, but just when you watch him play, he's vocal. He's shifty. He already has I think his biggest thing that goes in his favor at this point is just what you can tell is the sort of feel of the game. You can tell that he understands where people need to be, where they want to be. He can get into the lane and create. And I think the thing that jumped out at me that was so exciting to hear is he says, you know, somebody asked him, why do you go to Michigan State? He says, because they have great point guards. It's like, I know I can play for a great coach and become a great lead guard there. So again, getting a guy from La Lu, always a good thing. Getting a top 40 kid, always a good thing. But it's especially good when it's, your point guard of the future that, is going to be the lead dog. It's kind of like quarterback recruiting in a lot of ways. Like getting the guy who's going to have the ball in his hands the most is always really important. And if that kid can check a handful of boxes, you might have a special one on your hands. So this is quite the recruitment for Michigan State. I mean, John, you mentioned his finalists. He was perceived to be an Illinois lean for quite a while. And MSU sort of came back in this recruitment. I think Ty Rogers took a spot at Illinois and committed maybe earlier than people expected. And I believe I don't know that he pushed fears out by any stretch, but that's the world of college basketball recruiting. So super excited to have him aboard. And like you said, that 2023 class is could be an exciting one. So keep an eye. I wouldn't be surprised to see another, this is kind of the time of the year when those guys start to trickle in with their commitments. So wouldn't be shocked to see more in the, next few months.
Absolutely. Yeah. So good start. As it relates to the recent games, it feels like forever ago, but MSU took down Nebraska 79-67 I would call it an underwhelming, uninspiring win. Nebraska is quite bad, but kept it close by making their first, I believe, seven shots of the game, all challenged, I believe. And I think the other piece that was tough to watch was undersized Derek Walker, 6'9 center, had his way in the paint. And it's kind of Marcus Bingham and our center's only weakness in defense is when there's a guy that's just that thick and can kind of move people around. And you can kind of start to point out areas where you can find concern. He had 16 points, I believe, a career high. He never want that. That was tough to watch. Ultimately, the team gutted out a W. Marcus Bingham was benched for majority of the second half. I'm not sure if it was a hustle thing or just wasn't getting out of him what Tom was hoping for. But Max Christie really stepped up and had his best game as a Spartan. You know, he not only had 21 points, but he defended Nebraska's best player and Bryce McGowan's another stud freshman who played most of the game and held him to 5 of 16 shooting, 1 of 7 from three, 13 points. That's a good night. So it was really nice to see Max Christie take that step.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think the Christie thing is probably the biggest development from this game. We said a while back, in order for you to consider Michigan State in that truly elite realm of college basketball teams this year, while they are in the top 10, there seems to be a cut above that's just above that mark. And in order for Michigan State to get there, Max Christie was going to have to be a key. His progression was a key reason why. Well, in his last three games, I think we've seen that. They've been spaced out over the course of two or so weeks. But, against Oakland, he went out and put up 17. He played a strong game despite only 11 points against Northwestern. He did have 7 rebounds in that game. And then he comes out in this game and goes off for 21. And like you said, kind of looked the most complete game he's had. Made 3 threes. He's really found his stroke from outside recently. So you absolutely love to see that. I think the other two takeaways here is one, Gabe Brown probably had one of his more complete games. I think Izzo even came out and said this might have been his best all-around game as Spartan. He had 4 steals, 4 rebounds, made 2 threes, 14 shots, 2 blocks. So it was really active kind of everywhere. Didn't have a great shooting night, only 6 of 15 from the field. But that is what Michigan State needs at that position, especially defensively. Somebody that can wreak a little bit of havoc, guard up, guard down. and cause problems for the other team with that length. Gabe's always been capable of that. He's done it a lot, but I think, you know, these types of performances out of those two are really quite impactful. Also, I might get roasted for this. Shout out to Joey Hauser. What he did in this game in only 21 minutes, he had 5 assists, he had 8 rebounds, 2 on the offensive side, did commit 3 turnovers, which is the thing he needs to cut out of his game more than anything else, and did only go 1 of 3 from the field. But it's nice to see him finding ways to contribute when, you know, the things that you probably thought he was going to contribute when he came in, 3-point shooting, things of that nature, he's really just not there right now. But in 21 minutes, still found a way to be the leading rebounder on the team and tie Tyson Walker for a game high in assists. So you'd like to see him start doing these things, cutting down the turnovers. John, I know you want to talk about that specifically, cutting down the turnovers and maybe making another 3 or 2 every game would be nice, but small steps for Hauser. John, go ahead. Give us your rant.
Not happy. Angry. You know, I would say we've all been pretty patient. This turnover thing, it became comical in this game to the point where it's kind of like in wide receiver core just all starts getting the drops. You know, like, for whatever reason, everyone's thinking about it. And there were some turnovers that were like so far past egregious that, I mean, AJ Hogarth had 7. Yeah. That was tough. And you want guys to like play through it, but they're lucky they played Nebraska, man. Like there's a loss coming, and you don't need it in a home game against a bad team. It's out of control. And I know that the focal point for the staff and the team, it's just, they got to stop thinking, you know, it feels like they're thinking about don't mess up. They're like playing not to lose, right, with passing the ball. And this team is a fantastic passing for assist team. So then they just play. It's really nice. But, man, when you watch Tyson Walker, who had when you watch him thinking and trying to run sets, and A.J. Hogarth, like, just it's like a quarterback who's staring down a wide receiver. It's like, just play basketball, guys. You know, and it's tough. It's tough to watch that.
Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, turnovers, honestly, they had, you know, maybe more solid games turnover-wise, I feel like, this year as opposed to years in the past. It felt like they kind of have peaks and valleys, and I could be wrong, but it feels like games like this where it was 17, 18 turnovers, 19 turnovers happened a ton, like with relative consistency previously, whereas this team, it feels like a little bit more of a grab bag where some games you'll be closer to 10, some games you're up around their 20, whatever it is, they need to find a way to get it closer to the former than the latter, because like you said, John, there's a loss brewing. I don't know where it is, but it's coming. And, you know, it may have come this past Saturday, but quite frankly, we will never know. Michigan State was supposed to take on the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, but that game was postponed as of now to a later date due to Michigan's COVID issues. There's some weird things going on here that we're not totally sure of exactly what happened. Some strange things that have been said about the way and time in which Michigan reported some of their COVID results and kind of how they qualify some of the players on their roster. But yeah, John, I don't know if you had any thoughts about this. I think my only takeaway, my main takeaway, is that, you know, MSU, listen, Michigan is struggling. Michigan is not the team that people thought they're going to be at the beginning of this year. I think Michigan State should have and would have been favored in this game. However, they may have avoided a prime upset spot, because this Michigan team will be, as soon as they're healthy, to be again. They've already had another game postponed against Purdue. Very hungry. And MSU was not playing tremendous basketball going in. Yes, they've won, I think, 8 straight. but it's not like they're operating on all cylinders. And the turnovers like that are going to kill you against a team with at least talent. Michigan has talent. While they might not be a great quote unquote team or playing like one right now, they have talent enough and drive enough, and they hate you enough to beat you, especially on their own home court. So I think MSU might have dodged a bit of a bullet here. John, your thoughts?
This was a game that was going to benefit probably Michigan more than Michigan State, in the sense that Michigan's desperate for dubs, right? Good wins. Their best win right now is San Diego State. That is yucky. They stink. And they dropped the Purdue game. That's two huge opportunities for them. And they're not looking at the bubble. They're looking up right now. And you take away quad one wins. It doesn't hurt to lose quad one games. It hurts Michigan State, who would be playing a quad two team if they lose that game. That's not what you want. And like you said, it's a matter of time before that inevitable MSU goofy loss, but a loss that's coming happens. It's good that didn't happen here. Not saying it would have. Hey, maybe Michigan State would have beat the brakes off of this Michigan team, because they're also just a mess. We'll never know. You know, we do know is if to rescheduling, this is going to be tough. And I would bet that Michigan State's brass is not going to be overly flexible or cooperative in trying to jam in another game in the late season here, where MSU would have to play perhaps three games in 5 days or something to that effect, where Michigan is going to be desperate to get games in because they'll need the wins. I would see the repercussion, or the, you know, like you're saying, is like, I don't know how cooperative MSU is going to be. And here's a take that, you know, I know a lot of Michigan State fans were upset about the way in which the communication took place. I'm actually the complete opposite. And here's, they're the arch rival, man. And you want to talk about game, like, take out the COVID stuff, because I don't think it's fair for anyone to make accusations unless you have all the context, especially considering we're still in a global pandemic. It's and by the way, this is a game, like, so whatever. And if it hurts Michigan more to cancel this game. So full stop. Second, take out this stuff. Gamesmanship is a part of a rivalry. You better believe, like, when we found out that Michigan State found out at midnight that the game is going to be canceled. Absolutely. That's what rivals do to each other. They make it hard. They screw each other up. You know, like, they make it difficult. And like, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying, like, it just is what it is. That's a rivalry. And, you know, the repercussion, or the way you handle it back, is not being overly flexible about rescheduling. Right. Yeah. Like, it's what goes around comes around. Right. So I'm not too, like, I know a lot of people were really upset, and I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but it is a game, and it's sports are obviously an outlet for a lot of people right now, especially it's a very difficult time for a lot of people, and this is an escape from that. And then when that is taken, I can see how people can immediately get put a lot of their frustration in and focus it on a thing like that. And it is what it is. And I'll tell you, I do get that a lot of people feel like there's a pattern emerging with that athletic department. I'll say, again, no one has all the context. I will say there's one thing I'd say about the athletic department is, however they're handling all of this stuff between football last year, hockey this year, basketball last year and this year, they should probably call some people and figure out how to do it better. Because they're the program that's struggling the most with this. And it's getting to a point where they look silly. They look stupid. Because if other programs, you know, you'll see cancellations all over the place. You know, it's happening all over the country. But if this is a program that came out at the beginning of this pandemic, Jim Harbaugh came out and talks about being the leaders and the best, about how their protocols are going to be better and keep their student athletes healthier and safer than anyone else's. It's not happening. And if they can't do it, they can't figure it out, then that's whatever. But I will tell you that there are a lot of other programs and athletic departments who have been either very fortunate and lucky that it hasn't happened to them, and or they're doing a better job. So, you know, I hope everyone, first and foremost, player safety is of the utmost importance, and it is what it is, right? And if the game is rescheduled, it's rescheduled. And if it's not, you know, MSU stands to benefit more than Michigan as a result of the postponement. So they have to come to East Lansing. Ideally, Michigan State is healthy and can play that game. And before everyone throws stones, this pandemic is real, and who knows if Michigan State is next, you know, as far as getting the bug. So it's just be careful. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm an old man and it's just a game, you know?
No, but, I mean, MSU just dealt with their own issues regarding this not all that long ago. So I agree with you. There's definitely a human side to it where you take the rivalry out of it and just say, hey, I hope, you know, that everybody comes out of this feeling better. I mean, we've heard that this, especially in young athletes, like some of the things you hear about how it affects them are quite concerning. So I would first and foremost hope that everybody on that end that, you know, needs or treatment is able to get it. And, it, you know, hopefully that's not even the case, right? Like, hopefully everybody's young and healthy enough that it's not going to be anything serious. We haven't heard anything serious about it. But either way, yeah, player safety obviously being the utmost concern here. And then, yeah, I mean, your point to bring it back to sports, you know, putting that kind of to the side, which is very difficult to do. This matters more to Michigan than it does to Michigan State. They love to big time MSU and say, oh, you know, we're your Super Bowl and all that stuff. Well, shoe might be on the other foot this year. You might need Michigan State to play this game. And quite frankly, I agree with you, John. It's kind of shaping up that, you know, rather than play three games in 5 days, and especially late in the season, which is the only time they're going to be able to realistically fit this in, you know, maybe Michigan State kind of plays hardball. And it's really effective. I mean, this could end up being maybe the defining stretch of Michigan season. I mean, you know, they're sitting here with not the record that you want to see if you're a Michigan fan. And they don't have any good wins, and they have several not good losses. So with that in mind, if they're going to miss, I mean, they're sitting here at 7-6. Like, that seems preposterous. And it's not like these losses aren't all the great teams either. Like, Seton Hall, fine. Arizona's good. North Carolina, I don't believe North Carolina is ranked. Minnesota is not good. UCF, Rutgers in back-to-back games. I mean, you're sitting here, like you said, looking up at the bubble, and you only have a handful of chances to get back on the right side of that. Yes, the Big Ten's deep, so there's more chances than you get in a normal conference. But if you're missing out on home games, your home opportunities against Michigan State and Purdue, at times when neither of those teams are particularly rolling, it's you lose these shots. And eventually, like, I think college basketball is in a different place than it was last year. Like, I'm not sure that you're 15-12 or whatever, 15-14, whatever Michigan State was last year. I don't know if that's getting you in. And quite frankly, I'm looking at their schedule. They're going to have a tough time getting to 15 wins. But there's a lot of tough games left on this schedule. And I mean, let's say both of these don't get rescheduled. And listen, if you're Purdue and Michigan State, what is your incentive to reschedule? They still have to go on the road to Illinois, to Indiana, who, you know, say what you want about Indiana, it's still a tough place to play, to Michigan State, to Purdue, they end at Ohio State, they still host Illinois again, they go to Wisconsin, they host Ohio State. Like, there are brutal games on here. And yes, that's on one side very much the opportunity that they quite frankly need to get in, but like, you're costing yourself two other home games against teams that are in positions to be beat, and you can't throw opportunities like that away. So I hope that everything here is above board and whatnot, because if not, it's kind of short-sighted and ultimately could end up kind of tanking their season.
Hey man, you want to see your rival lose when they're at their best. There can be no excuses, right? And so when the preseason number two or three team or whatever they were is in this position to not make the NCAA tournament, you want it to be when they were at completely full strength. And that's realistic. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on them. We're going to hit the goodness matrix a little later here. We're going to quickly preview this week, which if you listen to last week or the week before this podcast, you can pretty much replay it, because MSU plays Minnesota and Northwestern again just kind of weird. But, you know, we talked about when they're playing Minnesota earlier, it was like, man, don't want to play these guys so early because, you know, that seven man rotation, you know, won't, the wheels won't fall off until probably the, you know, beginning of February. Well, it might be falling off early, man. they've lost a couple in a row. They are 10-3, but it is a Q2 game. So Minnesota, the number's not loving them overall. You may remember them. We talked about them last time as seven-man rotation. They've lost the last couple of games. And you know, I don't think this team, they have yet to win a game, at the exception of at Mississippi State. They've not gone and played in a big boy environment. So absolutely one that Michigan State cannot afford to drop if they would like to think about a Big Ten championship, which is a long ways off. But I don't know, maybe I said it to you, I don't remember, but like, you can't win a Big Ten championship in January, but you can make it really hard on yourself to win one. And these games, Minnesota at home, Northwestern at home, you make the path really, really difficult if you don't win games at home against NIT teams. So, I mean, Northwestern's reeling. They've lost three in a row. They're must wins if the Big Ten championship's on the table. Otherwise, yeah, we're just playing basketball, you know, until the tournament.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you know, for Minnesota, this is just the other shoe. I mean, it's not like they're even losing games close at this point. I mean, the win against Michigan was huge for them, although we're kind of seeing that maybe that doesn't carry the weight that we thought it would. Their last two games, home loss to Illinois by 23 and a road loss by 13 at Indiana. Again, a very good Illinois team, a tough place to play in Indiana, but not particularly competitive games. Hard to imagine that's going to change. I mean, you know, for Minnesota's, the bummer for them is that's by Michigan State postponing that last game, they now got four extra days to rest, which quite honestly, I think could all ultimately work out really, really well for MSU, but they're playing a rested team that wants to play, that plays this game and might take out some of their frustration on them. So yeah, I don't necessarily, you kind of nailed it there. That's a game you got to win. Northwestern, you know, again, we kind of know what they are. They're sitting at 8-5. They're 1-3. They kind of hit the Big Ten and the wheels started to fall off a little bit. And again, their losses closer, certainly. I think I would expect a closer game here than I would against Minnesota. I mean, they lost by only 6 to MSU, then lost by 4 to Penn State, and then lost by 8 on the road at Ohio State. I mean, they, you know, have another game in between the same way Michigan State does. They host Maryland. So we'll see. I mean, it's very possible they're coming off a 4-game loss stretch, and then, man, they head into a brutal stretch of games at Michigan State, home against Wisconsin, at Purdue, at Michigan, home against Illinois. This is a brutal stretch for Northwestern. I mean, these are two games Michigan State should win, right? Like you said it, you just said it. If they want to compete for a conference title, which is at this point sitting here again in early January, certainly on the table, these are games you got to win because we've seen other teams. I mean, not only because that's just sort of the standard, but if you look around, I mean, other teams, Purdue's sitting at 2-2. Purdue's already dropped two games. I think a lot of people weren't sure they were going to drop two games in the conference, period.
Right.
And now they're sitting there. They've handed Michigan State, you know, a little bit of breathing room. I mean, Illinois has already lost a game, I believe. So, you know, Michigan State really very much, I don't want to say in the driver's seat, but they certainly can. They're undefeated in the conference. They control their own destiny. And these are two games that if you want to be taken seriously, no, Illinois has not lost a game. Excuse me. You got to win, period.
Yeah, quickly putting the shoe on the other foot, these are games that, you know, Ben Johnson and Chris Collins are saying to their team, winning this game, winning at Michigan State, that puts them back into the NCAA tournament conversation. So if they have any chance of going to the NCAA tournament, they're both not in. They're not probably Minnesota closer than Northwestern with their win at Michigan. This is the game where you can circle and say, before we hit that mess that you just described, that was the schedule,
yeah,
things look a lot different if you sneak out a win in East Lansing. you know, you can start to say to yourself, okay, maybe we are an NCAA tournament team, or we should at least be considered. So, you know, Michigan State's going to get their best shot again. And I would say also Northwestern and Minnesota, while dropping their games to Michigan State at home, could probably watch that tape and say, feel pretty good about fact that, you know what I mean? So it's by no means a layup. That's why the home court advantage from the Izone, you know, from the, even the stand up old heads crowd is so big, because this is a tough league. As we all know, the league is down, I think, a little bit as far as elite talent. And that's why Michigan State, who is not an elite team, has a chance to compete for the championship. And they're going to probably need to win all of, if not maybe drop one Big Ten home game. And that is going to be completely reliant on the fan atmosphere. And going back to the Nebraska game, Tom Izzo even got on the mic and thanked the crowd, the Izzo alums, and was like, you guys helped us win that one. It's bigger than I think people realize, that home court advantage. So
yeah, and that is where, when like getting the rematch of two, like you said, very good point, hard fought games, certainly both games that were, neither of which I don't think felt like blowouts during them, getting the road win out of the way first for MSU is not a small deal. So a great point. And, you know, that crowd atmosphere is going to be big as MSU looks to go to 6-0 in the conference after this week. Now, looking ahead a little bit, John, the upcoming schedule after these next two, I mean, we don't want to, we'll obviously do previews as the week goes on. Another reason these games take on a little bit extra importance is because a three-game stretch afterwards, really the five-game stretch afterwards, is not easy. I mean, you talk about on the 21st, they head up to Wisconsin. 25th, you head to Illinois. 29th, you host Michigan. Then you go on the road to Maryland and Rutgers. Now, listen, Maryland and Rutgers, Rutgers certainly is dangerous at home. We've seen that. They beat the number one team in the country. Maryland, a place Michigan State has had some very competitive games, close losses, things like that. You know, that's – when we talk about winning the games that are – layups, quote unquote, this is why it's important, because this thing shapes up really dangerously very, very, very quickly.
Yeah, for the next five on the road, I don't, you know, you saw it. Nebraska is a tough place to play. They're the worst team in the conference. You know, the road games are never fun. For the next five, that changes the whole complexion of the season. Probably have to be realistic, there's going to be some L's in there. So gotta take home a couple dubs this week, and I think they're in a position to do it. You know, I think we'd like to see Marcus Bingham, you know, get back to maybe where he was after a dip. Max Christie seems to be stepping up. Gabe Brown is on firing on all cylinders and is frankly having the quietest all conference season in whole league. You know, he's just quiet about it, because, and I wonder if the reason is because he has a hard time creating his own shot. So maybe it just feels less effective because his buckets are on the break and spot up threes, but damn if he's not efficient. So lots alike. We want to see MSU maybe, I don't want to call these get right games, because when you've won eight in a row, it's hard to say that, but you got to get right in this. You got to get up to a Big Ten championship standard of basketball in these two games. Otherwise, it might be a tough sledding.
I agree. All right. Should we take a commercial break and then come back with the, what do you want to do after the break, John? I'll leave it up to you.
Let's hit him with let's keep it on basketball, do the goodness matrix, and then we'll switch to our other son.
Deal. All right. We will be back in a moment. 3, 2, 1. And we are back. So at the behest, urging, begging, pleading of our scores, dozens of followers, dozens of you, we have put together, I think our first edition of this year's Basketball Goodness Matrix. And this was John's, in terms of the categories, this was John's, it felt like a personal decision to use what we used for this, mm-hmm. from you.
It was. Yeah, I had been seen a lot of commercials lately, haven't had this in a long time. But when you do have Taco Bell, there's a time and place in your life when you choose to do it. And it's generally related to how you're doing in life. And so we put the goodness matrix together based on the time of day or scenario in which you are purchasing Taco Bell. And do we want to start at the top or the bottom here?
I think we start at the bottom. I think it's a fitting place to start for Taco Bell.
Okay, go ahead. Take it away.
All right. So our first category, and this is the lowest of the low, is Taco Bell several days in a row. I think as you'll notice as we go through this, John and I consider Taco Bell more of a treat, not a nutrition plan. And in light of that, we have really reserved this bottom spot for somebody who has, you know, you're going back and you're not necessarily going back happy that you're going back. You're going back because it's what's close. You don't want to make dinner. You just have a hankering for something different on the menu. You feel compelled to go back for multiple things, multiple days in a row. These are all warning signs that something might not be going great. So our team warning sign here, the only team to qualify for this prestigious level is Nebraska, because folks, it is simply not good out in Lincoln.
No, you've lost. It's when you go back multiple days in a row, whether you want to admit it or not, you're not respecting yourself, and Nebraska basketball is not respecting themselves right now. Whatever they're doing, Fred, as we've talked about at length, is grifting them like the Music Man, very hard in Lincoln. He saw them as a good mark. You know, they've kept Scott Frost. They'll keep me forever, you know, and they'll pay out. They will pay stupid amounts of money. I mean, it's fantastic. So, you know, Nebraska basketball, not very self-respecting. They are Taco Bell several days in a row, which moves us up to the next category, a new tier. This planned Taco Bell. And while there's not necessarily anything like inherently wrong with planning out meals, when you're pre-planning Taco Bell, something's gone wrong. Like right. you've something bad happened. You're like, this is not, things aren't going well for you. And Penn State and Northwestern feel very much in a position where they are they're finding little wins, and the little wins in your life can't be pre-planning Taco Bell as a meal, but for them it is.
Yeah, it's like you woke up in the morning and you're sitting at, like you're planning your meal like that morning. I think most healthy people are probably planning that meal, you know, a couple days out so you can go to the grocery store, make sure you got what you need. Other people are probably relying on you for food of some sort, whereas here you're just flying solo and it's the morning and you're like, God, it's 9:30. I hate being at work. What do I want to do tonight? I really don't feel like putting any effort in. I'm going to get Taco Bell tonight. So you're thinking about the menu all day. And again, your mind should be elsewhere, but it's focused solely on the cheesy gordita crunch that you're going to eat that night by yourself. And that's how I feel about Penn State and Northwestern. Things are bad. They're isolated. Nobody at either school cares about either of these programs. You know, in Northwestern's case, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, much like we saw sad Urban Meyer eating pizza alone. I can see Chris Collins sitting on a sidewalk somewhere in the snow eating a quesalupa or whatever you want, a gordita crunch or whatever it is, just housing it. Neither of these programs in great places. Both, I mean, Micah Shrewsbury, he's doing that because he's not getting paid what Scott Frost and our friend Fred are getting paid in Nebraska. Exactly. So he has to.
It's like, listen, man, I mean, I can coach a shitty basketball team too, but Fred Hoiberg demands $3 million to do it, which is fantastic, I think. But
yeah.
Moving to our next category, this is a special place, a place that you generally don't want to be at breakfast Taco Bell. Of the plethora of options in the world to eat breakfast, Taco Bell really shouldn't be on the list for any reason. And we feel like there are a handful of teams that fit in the screw it, I'm just going to get Taco Bell for breakfast category, because they're just all been very underwhelming to us for a lot of different ways and a lot of different reasons. Maryland, they've clearly given up on life by getting rid of their coach midseason, despite a nice roster, or seemingly. They've it's especially a bad thing when you wake up and you decide to make bad decisions like before 9 a.m. because it's just a litany of bad decisions after that. You've just thrown away the day. And it feels like Michigan has done that as well with their non-conference season. They just woke up and said, no, I'm going to throw my whole season away despite what I have in front of me. They feel very breakfast Taco Bell oriented right now.
Yeah, like whether it's by necessity or by choice, you know, theoretically the day could get better, right? Like just because you started with it doesn't mean it can't get better from here. Like UM, theoretically, it could go uphill from here. But you're really putting yourself in a tough spot by starting your day with something that is going to wreak havoc on your stomach for the remainder of your time spent awake that day. So, yeah, Rutgers, I mean, they're like the fun version of breakfast Taco Bell, right? Where you eat it and it really goes well and you have a great day afterwards. But that could easily turn into Taco Bell several days in a row, or even pre-planned Taco Bell, where you're like, wow, this worked the one time we beat Purdue. Oh, no, things have gone horribly wrong. We've lost 8 games in a row. Like there's both sides to this. Minnesota, I think, falls in that same bucket, whereas U of M and Maryland are very much the other side, where they're like, hey, this thing looks good. I'm going to try it. Oh, no, I feel horrible. Get me to the nearest bathroom.
And then the worst part. Well, as many of you have experienced, you know, you get absolutely hammered one night and you're like, I'm never drinking again. And then you find yourself getting hammered again that night. It's a similar Taco Bell situation. You can do that. Just insert Taco Bell instead of alcohol. It can be a slippery slope. Michigan and Maryland are staring down the barrel of it right now.
Very much so.
This one is the kind of the mid group Taco Bell for an actual meal. You know, it's not necessarily bad, certainly not good, because you're not self-respected enough to, you know, take yourself to Chipotle or something. Iowa and Indiana are so, it is a very mid meal, right? You're sober and choosing Taco Bell as an actual meal. Pretty mid choice, in my opinion. Iowa and Indiana are that.
I agree. Iowa and Indiana both just like, again, it's good. It can be great, but typically it's good. It is what it is. Taco Bell, personally, mid-tier fast food for me. So, you know, which is blasphemous to some people. Those people probably sound a lot like Iowa basketball and Indiana basketball fans that will clamor and tell you that it's the greatest meal that you'll ever have. Everything else is for peasants compared to the meal that Taco Bell is as a fast food. When in reality, you know, it doesn't really ever accomplish anything. It's kind of just, you know, right down the middle. It's good. It's good, not great on an average day. So that's how I feel about Indiana and Iowa. Just both good, not great.
Yeah, and that's how they feel about their programs too. Kind of in different directions. It's funny to me, just getting a dig in while I can because it's Iowa.
Please do.
Fran McCaffrey, I think he signed like a 7-year extension and they're 1-3 in the conference. Like, nice job.
respect. Such incredible levels of respect between him and Matt Rhule and like some of these other guys that lock up these big deals. Mm-hmm. Like, just way to go, man. It's like Mike Woodson, same deal at Indiana. Like, way to take a head coaching job. Like, didn't see that coming. Did see this coming. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. It's, again, these are teams that are like polar opposites in this. Iowa, not shocking. Very good at offense, terrible at defense. That's why they're mid. Indiana, very good at defense, terrible at offense. That's why they're mid. Taco Bell for an actual meal. Perfect. This one was near and dear to your heart, this next category, so I'll let you take this one.
Yeah, so this is when Taco Bell can be good. I think road trip Taco Bell is really excellent. T-Bell, because you're on a vacation, theoretically, or driving somewhere, and you want to treat yourself, you don't get Taco Bell for an actual meal. You certainly don't get it for breakfast, and you don't plan it out. I guess technically you'd probably say, hey, I'm taking a road trip. I'll get Taco Bell. Maybe that's our line of distinction, is this is impromptu road trip Taco Bell, where it just feels right. It's a treat. You're feeling good about it. Yeah, there's going to be some bumps along the way. You'll probably have to stop to use the bathroom somewhere. But for the most part, it's pretty good. I put Purdue and Ohio State into this category. Purdue being the downside of this, where, like, hey, you had to stop for the bathroom, like, right away. Ohio State is more of you make it a solid distance, and it just hits right. You got a Mountain Dew, a Baja Blast. Like, your life is good. You got that little extra pep in your step to make it the rest of the way on the road. But yeah, it's a special little treat. You're feeling good. Things could slide backwards, but also things could be pretty good moving forward.
Absolutely. You never know where it's going to take you. And then the best category, which we feel, well, it's not the best. It's the top in the Big Ten, because we don't believe there are any good teams in the Big Ten right now. But we do feel there are three teams that are fit the Taco Bell fourth meal category. Taco Bell fourth meal is a special time in your life. Mm-hmm. You maybe saw a commercial, or you just remembered, and you are in a very specific state of mind, probably under some types of stimulants. And you think this, and you are probably right in that this is the best time, and you haven't had it in so long. It just hits, you know, and Wisconsin, surprisingly to me in this category, Illinois, also a bit surprising there in this category to me, because they're without probably their second best player, or maybe best player in Curbelo. And Michigan State, they're right there. This is, we're all in a very good spot. And maybe for, like we were mentioning, for at least Michigan State and Wisconsin, you're surprised to be here, thrilled to be here. You know, you love where you're at in life. It's a solid place. And you're ordering things off the menu that you've never even knew existed that were on there. It's a great time in your life. And I can't give any higher praise than Taco Bell fourth meal when you're in the right state of mind.
Yeah, like this is like you're waiting in line to pick up, and they've just got extra tacos because it's that late in the night. So they just throw you an extra like quesadilla or something. Yeah. I've had that happen to me before. An extra Doritos Locos taco, whatever it might be. They throw that in your bag. You're happy to be there. It's feeling good. Like you said, now that could backfire the next morning after fourth meal. Not always great. So there is certainly a potential downside here. But I think at this point, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Michigan State are kind of clearly in that category alone. I don't think Ohio State gets there. I mean, I know they're number 13 in the country, but I just feel like there's a limit on that team. Purdue's surprisingly not there. I mean, Purdue's the one that I think is bummed out to not be at fourth meal. Like, they put themselves to bed. They couldn't quite make it there yet. Fell asleep early, already lost two games this season. Wisconsin, I think, is only here because of Johnny Davis, because Johnny Davis has been national player of the year level good, player of the year in the Big Ten, I think, by a decent margin at this point. Coburn probably second there. But, you know, that's why Wisconsin gets the jump. I put Michigan State ahead of Illinois, really, because Michigan State's losses are just a little bit better. I mean, at the end of the day, Illinois certainly doesn't have any. I wouldn't look at Illinois' schedule and say, oh, my gosh, those are just horrific losses. I mean, a 20-point loss to Cincinnati is not great. A 1-point loss at Marquette is more excusable. And then a home loss to Arizona, who's been really quite good all year long. I'm not super mad at any of those, but when I compare them against Michigan State's, which are a neutral site, two neutral site losses against Kansas and Baylor, two teams that are sitting very high in the rankings, and honestly have been ever since. I mean, you're talking about the number one, and I think, let me check it. I think it's 1-5 at this point. Kansas lost. Oh, wow. 1-10 or 1-9, depending on which poll you look at. Either way, two top 10 teams on neutral sites at the beginning of the year when you knew this Michigan State team was not going to hit the ground running super well. All things considered, that's about as good a resume as you can get. And I look at it from Michigan State's perspective. So these three, I think, could be very interchangeable. I think, John, you know, Illinois might even be the favorite moving forward, depending on what happens with Andre Curbelo. I know there's some mixed messages as to what his availability will be, but I think this, if I look at these three teams, I think with Curbelo, Illinois has a chance to ascend to another tier. I think if MSU can, you know, again, have Christie and Walker continue to take those next steps, they have a chance to go up a tier. But all in all, I think the order of MSU, Illinois, Wisconsin feels pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mentioned Johnny Davis. He's the guy that, you know, keeps the party going. You might have been dying. And then he just takes over, takes the aux cord. You know, he takes, you know, gets, it just keeps it, takes the night from good to great. It's one
guy. Party starter.
Just does. Just gets it going. And then the final category, which we don't think Illinois or Wisconsin, maybe not even Michigan State, maybe, who knows, can get to, is if you ever had a chance to be in Vegas and witness a wedding at the Strip Taco Bell, it's a pretty special thing, folks. That is a I don't think anyone's ever walked into that place sober. But if you walk in when there's a wedding, and you can buy a wedding package where they give you obviously packs, champagne glasses filled with Baja Blast, and a Taco Bell bouquet of sauces and t-shirts, obviously, bow ties. And you'd be surprised how many people go there right after getting married in Vegas. It's pretty, and if you're in the building when that takes place and there's a room specially where you can even get married in their room, you can get married in their little area. And I'll tell you, the rest of the Taco Bell turns into a party. You have become the reception center for a wedding, and you didn't even mean to. It's a special time and place in someone's life because it's already fourth meal for you. And now you've just taken it to a whole new level. It's incredible. It's, you don't buy drinks. You can buy alcohol there, but when you're buying people, when the counter turns into like a bar and you're buying people Doritos, Locos Tacos, as if you're buying shots for people, it's a special occasion.
Like, I can't tell two things. First, I can't tell if buying rounds, like I've always, I think everybody always wants to be like a round for the bar, right? Like everybody wants to say
right.
I don't know if it's so much better or so much worse to say a round of tacos,
a round of
for the bar, a round of cinnamon twists for the bar for everybody. Yeah, that's sort of outrageous. I can't tell which side I land on there, but. This has made me question some planning things I had in my own wedding. Had I known this existed, it would have merited a conversation. Now, would the wedding still have taken place had we had that conversation? Who's to say?
TBD.
Yeah. Who's to say? But so, still,
for the low price of $600, you can get the Taco Bell wedding package.
Just boy, that
it's a steal.
I think we might need to renew our vows already. I've been married for 2 months, and it might be time.
Get out there. Oh, that's man. Fine. Well, there's another that's the goodness matrix. Thank you for – if you're still here, wow.
Yeah.
I think it's time to switch gears because, Austin, there has been more exciting off-season football news than I can remember in quite some time this past week. We were having trouble keeping up. It started sad, but then it got very, very happy. I'll let you start with the sad.
Well, the sad, I would say, is that we did bid farewell to one member of the team for sure, and that is Speedy Naylor, who is now Lord take him now. He has gone to the NFL.
He's a sad.
He has ascended to a higher plane of being in the National Football League. A little bit of a surprising decision. I mean, I think you probably heard it. I think our podcast, we recorded the day before several of these decisions were made, certainly this one. And I was saying, I think that I thought Speedy should come back. I stand by it. Listen, as we have often said, go get your money. I'm never going to get mad at a player for going and trying to make money for their services, especially when they, until this year, have not been able to do so. For Naylor, I you know, from one side, you would have loved to see him come back and be a part of what could be another special season. On the other side, you know, the he's been injured every year. He's coming back to, as we'll get to in a second, potentially a pretty crowded pass catching group. So his chances to necessarily stand out may not be as plentiful as if some other guys weren't there. So I get it. I think his testing numbers are going to be absolutely critical for if slash where he would get drafted. If he is truly speedy, then I think he got a chance to get drafted. He's you know, if he actually has the elite speed that it seems like he has, or he has flashed at least, then I don't see any reason why he couldn't be drafted in the later part of the draft. However, if he comes out and runs underwhelming 40 times or doesn't look quick in and out of breaks, that hamstring acts up, would fully expect him to be a free agent. Now, someone will give him a look. I mean, he will absolutely get a look in the NFL, but I don't know. Depending on how things go, it might not be the straightest path. But I'm fascinated to see, you know, his offseason workouts and kind of where all those things go. So it'll be he has a lot of I don't want to say ground to make up, but those workouts are going to be very heavy in the minds of the people that are scouting and potentially drafting him.
Yeah, if you're not a top 5 40 time and your nickname's Speedy, we have a problem.
Yeah, tough.
There are some returns that we've locked in, and it's not necessarily in any order of importance, but they all are important in their own very specific and unique way. Ronald Williams, CB1, who for all the guff that the Michigan State secondary probably deservedly got, I would say Ronald Williams became a very passable Big Ten corner towards the end of the season. I think people even stopped throwing his way as much, and he certainly had the length and the intangibles. But him coming back, you know, is huge, because that was, if you even just, let me talk about this in the pod before, if you have a guy that can play at an average level in the Big Ten, if you taking it away, you don't even know what's behind it. And that's when it gets really scary. So that was a huge add. What do you think?
I think Williams, he's only a half step down. I was trying to, like, while you were talking, prioritize the four guys that decided to come back for their final season and, like, rank them 1 through 4. I think Williams is a half step behind the other three that I can't prioritize between the three. I can't do even 1A, 1B, 1C. They're all one to me. But Williams in particular, I think you saw him grow a lot. I mean, this is a guy that played JUCO ball and then went to Bama, got hurt, didn't play, and then was immediately thrown in as a starter in the Big Ten. I mean, what you wanted to see from him is for him to take steps forward in his play and see him get more comfortable as the year went on. I think we absolutely saw that. To your point, I really think they started throwing away from him and bringing him back. Listen, that's another body that can, he's physical. He's handsy at the line. He doesn't come up there and play that much. And that familiarity that he brings will probably allow for Scotty Hazleton to, you know, unleash a few different things moving forward. That familiarity, I mean, that's what kind of makes last year so incredible, is that Michigan State had basically one offseason, a ton of new transfers, and still went out and won 11 games with essentially no continuity. Now they have that, and Ronald Williams is not a small part of that. I mean, you think about the corners next year, you know, you made a good point. If he's not there, I mean, talking Chester Kimbrough, you're talking a lot of freshmen, and Chuck Brantley was coming off an injury. Now, listen, Chuck Brantley and Ronald Williams is not a bad starting corner combination. I think we saw Kimbrough get a little bit better. Marky Lowry played quite a bit, and they seem to really, really like these DBs that they're bringing in, guys like Caleb Coley, Malcolm Jones. So there's plenty of bodies, but to bring the number one cornerback is huge. I have to say, I think it's a half step at least behind these other three, because while it's amazing, the three guys that decided to come back is on par. I actually think it's more important than when guys like Drew Beasley and Jacob Panishuk decided to come back this past year. We saw how big an impact they had. The three guys that are coming back in Jaden Reed, Xavier Henderson, and Jarrett Horst, it is truly difficult to overstate the importance of each one of these guys coming back. Because we're in the secondary, we'll start with Xavier Henderson. I mean, I think MSU might benefit from a little bit from the fact that X is not a surefire NFL safety because he doesn't have amazing straight line speed. He's probably more of like a hybridish in the box guy, but at the college level, he's an extremely good, a very, very good starting safety, a starting safety you can win a conference championship with, no question. And as we said, continuity is so important. This is one of the only guys that's been a starter for 3+ years in on this entire team that'll be coming back. So you're getting back a defensive captain, you know, one of the quarterbacks of the defense, the spine of that defense now with Cal Halliday and Henderson, and then guys up front like Jacob Slade and, you know, Jalen Hunt and Simeon Barrow Jr. You know, it gets very exciting to see that in your defense. So X coming back is just massive. So on the defensive side of the ball, tough to overstate that. Plus those, you know, when you think about the pass defense, you brought back your two most important defensive backs, guys that I think a lot of people had penciled in to leave. One, at least Henderson, maybe not Williams, but at least Henderson. And then you brought in Jacoby Winman, and then you brought in Aaron Brulé, and you also brought in Chris Bogle. There's plenty of time left in the portal to bring in more guys and a recruit like Alex Van Sumeren. Yes, you lost Beasley and Panishuk, but for everything that they brought in hustle and motor, they lacked a little bit in that top end talent. You just brought in a ton of top end talent. This defense should theoretically get a big time influx, and keeping Henderson there is absolutely huge. Do you have any thoughts to add there before we jump to the offensive side?
You know, it just kind of begs the question, are they going to change the defensive scheme? You know, it was talent. It was because of the talent situation. I guess you can look up and down and say, okay, well, the talent hasn't really changed, but you've got guys who have been in it for 2 years. Do you feel the continuity of them playing together in the secondary is better or good enough to not play, keep everything in front of you? I don't know. I think the goal from Hazleton was to get more top end talent before he could change it up. But at the same time, not saying it's perfect, but they won 11 games doing it. So maybe you run it back again, you know, and maybe they get a little bit better at it. You know, who knows? I don't know. You mentioned Xavier Henderson being huge. The reason it's so big is, and it's not a knock on these guys, but you're looking at like a D2 transfer starting next year in yep. Kendall Brooks if Xavier Henderson's gone. Not great. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to be in that position. So huge. It's again, he's an above average safety. It's what you would have had to replace with is the huge right. impact. So huge on that side. But yeah, the offensive side of the ball, just as big.
To quickly comment on that very last part, what this does is the same thing that it allowed Tucker to do on the defensive line last year, which was catch up in high school recruiting. It gives you another year. I mean, you're buying yourself a full year of having to figure out and stockpile depth, which MSU's done a great job of doing up front via the transfer portal. And you saw them hammer the high school recruiting ranks by bringing in Quavian Carter, Simba Carter, Zion Young, Van Sumeren, and James Schott. I mean, they loaded up in these areas knowing that, you know, you're going to need some help when these 6-year guys leave. Now you've got really probably only Jacob Slade who's going to depart after next year, and you're going to add another class of defensive linemen behind that. And then the secondary, you know, like you said, there's a lot of unknown behind, but you're now giving these true freshmen the opportunity that if you're now putting yourself in the position where if they're playing, it's because they are simply better than the guys in front of them, not because they have to, which I do not think was necessarily the case this year with a guy like Chuck Brantley, Marky Lowry, even Justin White, certainly. So now you're running back out. Ronald Williams, your 5 starting defensive backs are Ronald Williams, Chuck Brantley at corner, Henderson and Angelo Gross at safety, and Darius Snow at nickel. While you may look at that and see those crazy numbers from a year ago, that's a lot of talent with a lot of talent behind it that's young and excited and going to try to take reps from each other. You should be very excited about that group. And honestly, this is kind of that symbiotic relationship with the pass rush. MSU did not have a very good pass rush last year. Quarterbacks would just sit back in the pocket and kind of pick them apart. If this pass rush can improve, which I think with the guys they brought in, it should, and maybe with a little bit more creative blitzing and more by the book defending from their linebackers, read between the lines there, however you want. It should improve, which will beget a more successful secondary. So that makes all of this even more important. But like you said, on the offensive side, when you bring back your wide receiver one and your left tackle, it's a quarterback aside, hard to think of two things that are more important to a successful offense. As I'm sure everybody saw, while Speedy Naylor may have left, Jaden Reed has decided to come back for another year. And so has left tackle Jarrett Horst, who missed a decent amount of the end of the year. I'll start with Reed. It's impossible to overstate what he means to this team. Period. End of story. He ended up with a 1,000-yard season, had two massive touchdown grabs. I believe he had two grabs, whatever. He's incredibly important to this team. His relationship and history with Peyton Thorne obviously is over documented at this point, but we saw him make plays against Michigan. We saw him make plays against Penn State. We saw him make plays against Miami, Pittsburgh, all of these fantastic teams with talented secondaries. He took them all on and he made plays. He made plays in the rain. He made plays in the snow. He made plays in the sun. He made plays indoors, outdoors. He did it all. And he managed to turn in one of the best seasons in Michigan State receiving history, 59 catches, just over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Also had two punt return touchdowns. You just brought back, especially after losing Kenneth Walker, by far your most important offensive skill position player. And that can't be overstated. The opportunities that that's going to open up for guys like Montori Foster, guys like Keon Coleman, some of these freshmen that are coming in, one of whom we'll talk about, just got added to the class. Christian Fitzpatrick, what it does for Malik Carr. I mean, he opens up a lot on this offense. So bringing him back is, you're talking about a first team All Big Ten wide receiver type of talent. That's just couldn't be bigger. And then, honestly, at least as impactful is the left tackle Jarrett Horst. While he might not be that same level of top end talent that Jaden Reed is, that game breaking talent, you saw Michigan State's offensive line take a step back when he left. The difference from him to Luke Campbell was significant, to put it kindly. So while he's probably going to get some stupid holding penalties, he's probably going to clip once in a while. He is a rock solid left tackle on a team that desperately needed another tackle addition via him staying, via one of these freshmen popping, or via a transfer. MSU was I think that was the biggest red flag when you're looking at this depth chart, was who is playing the tackles. We know who's playing the inside, you know, two of the three guys on the inside. We think Spencer Brown could probably play right tackle, but who's our left tackle? And Jarrett Horst answering that question is absolutely massive. I don't think it puts acquiring or having a transfer left tackle come in out of the question, because I don't think Spencer Brown is a lock for the right tackle job. So don't be surprised at all to see MSU go out and get another one or two. Honestly, they might take a crack at two starting linemen at right guard and left tackle, because Horst can play either side. So, but either way, I think you're looking at an offensive line now that has, if Horst stays at left tackle, Samek, Duplain, and Horst as your kind of left three on that offensive line, that's pretty damn good. And I'd rather protect the blind side than the other side. So MSU is in a much better place for having him back. And just to zoom out a little bit, I think, John, you were saying before we got on, you can go from cautious optimism to full-blown optimism now with this team. Yes, Speedy Naylor's gone. Yes, Kenneth Walker's gone. There's no question it's going to take a lot to replace them. But this team is going to be really dangerous. This offense should still be really good, and they have a lot of time to add talent to this roster. And there are some incredible talents sitting out there in the transfer portal, many of whom I'm sure Michigan State has already been in contact with. So, it's exciting. To allow Tucker to continue to stack these recruiting classes, I don't think they're going to be done just yet. With what they need to do. So I expect some more names to come on and off the roster, but it's tough to not be really excited about next year already.
Yeah, man. I mean, if year one was, you know, grit and Barrett, year two was the lotto year. You hit the lotto in a lot of situations, and that's okay. That's awesome. I mean, that's what you want to do. You took advantage of the transfer portal. More than anyone else, and you created an offensive and defensive scheme that maximized their talent, and everything kind of fell into place, or a lot of things did rather. Year three, I'm calling this one the buy year. You're buying this year to build something really big. And I don't know if it's fair to now have the expectations of double-digit wins every year. I think that's, unless you have started to stack like three or four classes in a row, like Ohio State is done, I think that's a little unrealistic. You even saw what happened to Clemson this year. Even when you do, sometimes it can not work out. So yeah. For me, like you mentioned with Xavier Henderson's as the specific example, like you bought yourself a year at that position. With all of these returns, bought yourself that opportunity to recruit at a really, really high level. And, you know, we didn't even mention MSU landing a top, 200 kid and top 300 in wide receiver commit from out west, Jeremy. Has an opportunity to come and be impactful immediately. That's the kind of kid that MSU just hasn't been in the running for in the past. And now this past recruiting class, which will finish probably top 20 after everything shakes out, a lot of those commits, you know, the four stars, you have a stat about it. They committed before like the glow up got to New Year's Six bowl win. Like they were. So the momentum is very real, and, you know, it's not guaranteed that it continues, but you buy this year with that returning talent and you can start to build and get those four stars on the field in the year next. They start to see it this year, and then now you're cooking, right? So
I think it's funny. I got into an argument online, always a good thing to do, yesterday with some people talking about the Detroit Lions and how they won their final game, which ironically kept them from getting the number one pick. And people were talking about offseason momentum. And that's, if that's your prerogative, that's your prerogative. But I don't really believe in that at the professional level because money talks and you win through a draft. However, I very much believe in it in the collegiate level because these kids get to pick for themselves. They're not being offered contracts. Sure, there's NIL deals that are coming through, but this is not true blue free agency, and there's no draft. The Michigan State can't just go into a high school and say, you're coming to play for us now because it's our turn to pick a player. So that's not how this works. So the image, the momentum, the showing, hey, here's who we are, what we are as a brand, what we are as a school, what we package ourselves at, that's so important. And I think, to your point, MSU was able to put together a class that had 6 four-star recruits in it, including Jeremy Bernard, who, by the way, you'll really enjoy watching. And I will not be surprised at all if he gets to play right away next year. He's a real deal. And by the way, went to middle school with Caden Hauser, the quarterback recruit. So I like that they're keeping that symmetry going for the remaining for the rest of Michigan State's college football program's time, I am sure. But Michigan State had 6 four-star recruits in this class. That is as many 4 stars as they had in every class from, I believe, 18, 19, 20, all three combined. That's big, especially when you consider most of those guys, John, to your point, committed before the glow up, quote unquote, was real. So, and you already see it. And we don't cover recruiting super closely on this podcast, and we never will, but we'll talk about what we see and what we hear. When you look at the names, if you follow people on Twitter, these guys always like to announce that, hey, I got an offer from here, I got an offer from there. You know, you follow some of the really good writers like Justin Thind that are out there that drop, you know, really valuable knowledge and say, hey, we're here in Michigan State's name in connection with these guys. They love them. It is almost unanimously coming from 4-star top 250 kids across every rating service with very few exceptions. 4 or 5-star kids, a handful of threes. These 3 stars are typically guys from Georgia, which MSU is, that's going to be the new Ohio State, the under-recruited kid from Ohio. It's now going to be Georgia 3 stars. That's the new thing. That's what we're seeing. So this momentum, I mean, this is the time of year when these kids start taking official visits during college basketball season. Won't be surprised to see MSU host some huge events centering around some of those basketball games in February, March. And listen, they're not done. When you hear that term tuck coming, this is what they're talking about. And anybody who wants to take it lightly, you do so at your own risk, because I think what you're seeing at Michigan State right now from an off the field and recruiting standpoint is something that they've quite simply, despite all the success, despite, you know, Rose Bowls and 10-win seasons and college football playoffs, they've never had momentum like this. And they've never had a concerted effort behind the type of kid that they want to go get and the ability to go get them the way that they do right now. So which makes A, the excitement so big for these future recruiting classes, but B, it makes that bye year so important, because now you can stack those big classes on top of each other. Michigan State just had its best class in a long time. Guess what? The next one's even better. Guess what? The one after that is on par. That's when you talk about a real program that's here to stay, and that's why you pay Mel Tucker all that money. All right, that's it. That's my rant, John. Go ahead.
I love it. It's exciting. It's new and different and weird to feel optimistic about your football team. And frankly, I hate it. It's awful. The expectations are different again. And, you know, we mentioned this being a buy, the buy year, and meaning it's a BUY, like we're buying a year to sustained success. And frankly, it may be a step back wins wise, because 11 wins is a lot of freaking wins. Mm-hmm. But you're able to feel really good about the floor of the team, because what you just saw with the previous roster at 11 wins, right? So the floor is raised considerably. And I just want to throw a couple quick names at you and before we end. Jaden Reed's coming back. You know, he finished 9th in season receiving yards all time for Michigan State. There are three guys on this list, the top 10 list, that returned for another year. Courtney Hawkins, his coach, Plaxico Burress, and Charles Rogers came back after 1,000-yard receiving yards years. Those are names.
Pretty good names.
And I'm not saying Jaden Reed has the success that they do or even did when they came back or at the NFL level. But he's undoubtedly had one of the top 10 best receivers in Michigan State history, full stop. And he's coming back. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Can't be understated. And you talk about this offensive line with Horst. MSU hasn't had an NFL offensive lineman since when?
Ryan Allen, probably.
Not good. That's too long ago. Like what yeah. year was that?
I mean, that was at least 3 years ago.
Is Jarrett Horst an NFL offensive lineman? I don't know. He's the closest to it on this roster as far as the next NFL draft. Maybe that changes, you know, in years to come, because there's some good young talent on it. I don't know, man. It's just it's fun to have fun again. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, I agree. And it's what I love that Mel Tucker's done as we wrap up here is he's like created two seasons. Like I am paying as much attention to the maybe more to the off season as I do the regular season. It makes me excited again to pay attention to who's in the transfer portal, to know the names of the kids that they're chasing. It's fun. And then you see those kids. I think the other part he's done is like these transfers come in and play for the most part. These freshmen come in and get a chance to play for the most part. He's creating a really fun atmosphere. And, you know, I think we could have a fun year as we sit here on January 10th. Surely we won't cover this anymore as the season goes on.
Man, our poor basketball team ranked in the top 10. We are
gushing about football.
I know.
Play more games, guys.
That's right. Yeah, JK, you know what? If they beat Minnesota and Northwestern this week, I will. We will give more love next week.
We'll take them bowling. Something like that.
We'll take them bowling, and we'll consider a Taco Bell fourth meal with them.
Maybe. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but we'll think about it.
Awesome.
All right. All right, guys. Thanks as always for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See you.